Good afternoon, everyone. Trust everyone's having a wonderful Sabbath so far. Looks like our numbers are a little bit down from what they normally are. I'm only half here, not myself, but my wife's not here with me today. We attended a funeral up near Zimmerman where we live for one of her friends, close friends that she works with, and her husband had died of cancer just this last week. So we attended that funeral, and she stayed to kind of be with the family, and I raced to church to be with you. She's on the webcast, so I know she's telling me to straighten my tie or something right now. So hi, hun. So she's out there. I recently read a book that had quite an impact on me, and I want to begin today by way of introduction to my topic by reading just a portion of it. The author of it is anonymous, but I appreciate the depth of thought and the depth of research that this author brought to this work that they put together. What? Once upon a time, there were three little pigs who had grown too big to live in their mother's cozy cottage. So one day they left home to make their own way in the world. And the three little pigs trotted off down the hill, each taking a different path. It wasn't long before the first little pig met a farmer pulling a cart filled with straw. "And may I please buy some straw to build a house?" asked the little pig. "Well, of course," replied the farmer, "but a straw house won't be very strong." Very wise man. But the little pig didn't listen, so he was busy stacking the bundles of straw for his new house. And in no time at all, the house of straw was finished, and the little pig went inside for a nap. And he had just shut his eyes when there was a knock at the door, and it was the big bad wolf, and he was hungry. Little pig, let me come in," growled the wolf. "No," cried the little pig, "not by the hair on my chinny chin chin." "Then I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house down," laughed the wolf, and that's just what he did. It's pretty intense. Soon the house was finished, and the little pig had just sat down to rest when there was a knock at the door, and it was the big bad wolf. He was even hungrier now. Little pig, let me come in," he growled. "No way, not by the hair of my chinny chin chin," cried the second little pig. "Then I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house down," cried the wolf, and that's exactly what he did. Another very sobering outcome. Tragic, really. But it gets better. It does get better. Meanwhile, the third little pig had met a builder. "And may I please buy some of your bricks to build my house?" he asked. "And of course," replied the builder, "a fine, strong house of bricks will last forever." And so the third little pig took the builder's advice. He would build the strongest house in the land. And finally, after a hard day's work, the house was finished. It had four strong walls of brick, a tiled roof, a sturdy wooden door, and a large fireplace with a chimney. And the third little pig had just put a pot of turnips. Excuse me, I skipped a very important part. The third little pig had just put a pot of turnips on the fire to boil when he saw his brothers running down the road, closely followed by the big bad wolf. "Quick," he cried, the third little pig, "hide in here." Little pigs, let me come in," the wolf growled, his tummy rumbling very loudly with hunger. "No way, not by the hairs on my chinny chin chin," cried the three little pigs. "And then I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house down," laughed the wolf. But wait, it gets really good here. But the brick house stood firm. Very powerful, I think. But the brick house stood firm. Of course, the wolf was furious, and "if I can't blow down your house," he said, "I'll come down the chimney and I'll gobble you all up." And the big bad wolf climbed up on the roof and jumped down the chimney. He landed with a huge splash in the pot of turnips boiling on the fire below. He leapt up with a scream and ran out of the house, never to be seen again. I think that last part was kind of added for effect. I don't think that's kind of far-fetched. And the three little pigs lived happily ever after in the house made of bricks. So a great book, wonderful book. Well, let's read a better book. Turn, if you would, over in God's Word, this book, to Genesis chapter 12. God has given us some other stories, examples of real men and women of faith whose lives speak, like the one I just read, of the importance of building a structure that can endure the attacks, endure the huffing and puffing of the enemy in his attempts to blow our spiritual houses down. And I want to spend some time here in Genesis 12 in the story of Abraham, which is perhaps, in my view, one of the strongest examples of an individual who built a structure that would last. And there's three mindsets, if you will, that this man, Abraham, possessed that I believe enabled him to endure, enabled his spiritual house to stand through everything that the enemy could throw at him, mindsets that if we embrace them, can help us endure the same. So what are they? Now, let's begin reading here in Genesis 12, verse 1. Genesis 12, verse 1. And now the Lord said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land that I'll show you. And I'll make of you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. And you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I'll curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And then notice this, verse 4. This is the first mindset that Abraham had. In verse 4 he says, so Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram at this point was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Here's the first one. Mindset number one. Maintain a mindset of dogged refusal to be anchored to any other foundation than the one true foundation, Jesus Christ. Maintain a mindset of dogged refusal to be anchored to any other foundation than the one true foundation, Jesus Christ. So put yourself in Abraham's shoes for a moment. I mean, what if in the midst of living where you do, in the community you're at, wherever it is, in town or in the country, God came to you and he said, you know, I want you to pack up your family. I want you to load up your belongings, as many belongings as you can carry. And I want you, you're going to leave your friends. You're going to leave your job, your career, your home, your cable TV, your comfortable bed. And I want you to go where I'm going to tell you to go. How would we respond? I mean, honestly. And obviously this is God speaking, so we'd be very respectful, but we might have a few questions, right? We might have a few concerns that we'd express. Lord, so where exactly am I going? Where is this land? Are we talking 20 miles, 50 miles? How long is it going to be until I get there? Days, months, years, weeks? Should I put my house up for sale? Or should I just rent it out in case this thing doesn't pan out? You know, a few questions like that. But that doesn't appear to be what Abram did. That wasn't his response to what God was asking him to do. If it was, we're not told here. In fact, in Hebrews 11, it tells us that Abraham, when called to go to a place that he would later receive for his inheritance, simply obeyed and went, even though he didn't know where he was going. He just departed. So it seems that although there was a lot he didn't know, what he did know was good enough, right? He knew a couple things. He knew who it was who had talked to him. That's big. And he knew what this being who had talked to him had promised. And that's huge as well. And that was enough for him. That was enough for him to latch on to anchor himself to that sure foundation. He departed. No questions asked. You know, each of us, you and I, we choose every day what we're going to anchor ourselves to, don't we? We choose the foundation that we're going to be attached to in our actions, in our decisions, and what we say and do, our attitudes, big and small. You know, and our responses to the choices we have, they testify to what kind of foundation it is we're anchored to. I think it's important then that we once in a while examine, we look under our feet to see what it is I'm anchored to. Do we know that it's bedrock there? Are we sure? Or are we mistaking things that we think are bedrock for things that are actually sand, that aren't solid? And is there things in my life that if they were to be pulled out from underneath me suddenly, my faith would crumble? They would challenge my spiritual foundation. One foundation we might be tempted with, it might be family. As we examine what stands under our feet. And family, we know, is very important. God, after all, he's the author of family. And Maybe you've heard the sentiment expressed by some, you know, my family's everything to me. If I don't have family, I don't have anything. And they are incredible blessings that God has provided. But for us individually as Christians, as disciples of Christ, although family is a thing, a very important thing that God has given to us, they're not the thing, right? They're not everything. We know in Luke 14:26, we're told, if anyone comes to me and does not hate or love less, and that's the true meaning of the word, we love less our father and our mother, or our wife or our children, or brothers or our sisters, even our own life, such a person can't be my disciple. And yet how many Christians we know who followed a loved one, a parent, a child, a husband or a wife out of the faith, afraid if they stand on the convictions that have moved them, that they'll lose that relationship because they're facing resistance to it. And far too many have fallen into those sinking sands. And so my family, it's important, it's a gift, but it's not a sure foundation that we should build on. What about things of this life? Is that what I'm anchored to? How solidly connected am I to the things of this life? This seems kind of like a no-brainer. We know, obviously, that this world is not a solid foundation to be connected to. 1 Corinthians 15:9 says that if in this life alone we have hope, we are above all men most pitiable. And we know that, at least we know that intellectually. But sometimes the way that we live our life, the choices we make, can really betray what our foundation is, betray what drives us. You know, I want to serve in my church more, but I just don't have the time right now. I don't have the resources right now. I want to give more of myself. I want to truly, really keep these holy days and the Sabbath like I should. But I'm just not in a place right now financially, and I need this job. And so we can begin to compromise. And we begin not to really do the things that we know we should. And it goes without saying, I think, that God isn't calling us into a layaway plan. He's not telling us we can put certain things on hold for a while and then pick them up again. We build our security, our faith, in doing the things He tells us to. And we respond to that, not the things we don't have or do have in this life. So it's not a solid foundation, the things of this world that we should build our foundation on. Another example, sometimes we can even mistake things that we do in service to God, right, for the religious expression as bedrock, that really they're not. In the past, I know I've made the mistake of doing this, maybe attaching too much significance to a particular organization or a particular religious leader, thinking that somehow was bedrock. And I remember as a student, I attended the church's college out in Pasadena back in the 80s, and then I went to this lecture at one point, and the speaker, who was a respected, wasn't a pastor, but a respected teacher at the college, he stood up in front of a group of men, and he told us, that if we wanted to be leaders, if we really wanted to be able to serve in God's church, that we should try to emulate the one who God had placed in that highest office. And part of that meant not just kind of emulating what he did, but emulating how he dressed. And so we proceeded to talk about how we should, learn to tie as young men, a full Windsor knot, how we should really maybe try to wear cuff links instead of just regular button shirts, and one that I'll never forget, that we should try to wear long tube black dress socks that go all the way up over our calf, so it would cover up any glimmer of shining leg when we are sitting down. I never did wear the cufflink. I couldn't afford it. Still can't. Don't wear those. I can tie a pretty good Windsor knot. Got that down. But I really kind of struggled a little bit with that sock thing. I mean, I'm kind of tall, kind of lanky, and even still I don't have much calf muscle, so I can't find a sock that goes up over my calf. And so I walked around a lot with my socks going down into my ankles. And to this day, of a little bit of embarrassment, I'll sit down and, I kind of want to cover and pull down my pant leg to cover up any flash of leg. So I had a little bit of struggle with that, presented somewhat a stumbling block. But it was a mindset that we kind of had back then. And that was kind of the mindset that some of us had. I know I had. And it carried into so much more than just dress. 1 Corinthians 2:5 says that our faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. And our foundation can't be in one man or a group of men. That's not a strong, secure place that we should be. And there's many more that we could talk about. Turn, if you would, over to Matthew 7. Matthew 7. So many things in this life that can be mistaken for false foundations that really aren't solid. None of these things, not our family, not the things of this life, not a religious affiliation, group of men, or a man, or any religious tradition, is really spiritual bedrock. So what is spiritual bedrock? Well, let's begin reading here in verse 24. Verse 24 says of Matthew 7, "Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I'll liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell, and great was its fall." And so he says, whoever hears these sayings of mine, man, the person who does that is built on a solid rock. So being anchored to a spiritual rock means to be responsive to his word, to be responsive, obedient to his law, with what's in this book that he gives us. And that's one way we know that we remain on solid ground, that we can remain protected from the enemy. But our foundation goes even deeper than that. Turn, if you would, over to 1 Corinthians 3. 1 Corinthians 3, there's more to this foundation that you and I need to understand. Paul here in 1 Corinthians 3, he expands on just what that foundation is. And it's responsiveness to his word, yes, but it's built on more than that. In 1 Corinthians 3, verse 10, Paul says, "According to the grace of God which was given to me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation and another builds on it. But let each one take heed how he builds on it, for no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ." And so it's about being anchored to the foundation of his word, yes, his law, and that's part of it, but it's also about why I'm responsive to that law. What is it that makes me responsive to that? And it has to do with relationship, doesn't it? My relationship to him. It's about recognizing my dependence on him, not on what I know, not on what I am, but on him, the things that he has done for me, the hope of salvation that I have without merit through him. And we're to cling to that. We're to embrace that because that's bedrock. Nothing else is. Nothing else is. And that's the mindset Abraham embraced, wasn't it? He was all in. He rejected substitutes. He rejected other false foundations that he could have attached himself to. And he was willing to walk away from them, to depart from them without hesitation. And he determined to attach himself to the one foundation that would endure and that was lasting, his Lord Jesus Christ and the promises he'd given to him. That's the kind of foundation that you and I want to build on as well, isn't it? Anything else is shifting, sinking sand. How do we build a house that will resist the attacks of the enemy? We maintain a dogged determination to anchor ourselves to the one true foundation, Jesus Christ. Okay, so we have to be anchored to that one true foundation. That's the starting point. That has to be the first place we start before anything else that can be built will endure. So what else is there? Well, let's read on here in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. 1 Corinthians chapter 3. You know, once that foundation is set, once we're firmly anchored to that and nothing else, only then can we begin to build, right? Well, let's see how we're supposed to build. Look at verse 12. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 12. "Now if anyone builds on this foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, each one's work will become clear. For the day will declare it, because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test each one's work of what sort it is. And if anyone's work which he has built on it endures, he will receive a reward. But if anyone's work is burned, he will suffer loss, but he himself will be saved, yet so as through fire." And so there's a lot better story than the first one we read, right? We were just building with bricks. We're talking about gold, silver, precious stones. And that's the kind of thing that I want to build my house with, don't you? Bricks are great, but this is much better. Now, turn again over, if you would, to Genesis 12. I think most of us would agree that's what we would want to do. We want to do that too. It says here, though, that some of his people, even Christians who are rooted and grounded and embrace that foundation, anchored to that foundation, could be tempted for whatever reason, maybe to begin building with precious jewels, silver and gold, but then gradually begin building with hay and straw and sticks and stubble. Why would they do that? Well, how could that happen? And more importantly, I guess, how could I guard against me doing that? Make sure I don't go there. How do I guard against that mindset? Well, there's a couple things here we see in this example of Abraham in Genesis 12, Abraham, who, you know, though he wasn't perfect like us, he had some failures. He consistently built with those precious jewels, that gold and that silver. What did that look like? What does this story tell us about building a spiritual house that will endure? Again, these are mindsets. Now, let's pick up here again in verse 5. Genesis 12, verse 5, it says, "Then Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people whom they had acquired in Haran, and they departed to go to the land of Canaan. And so they came to the land of Canaan." Notice this in verse 6 here, because you might miss it if we read it too fast. Verse 6, "Abram passed through." Abram passed through the land, the place of Shechem, as far as the terebinth tree of Morah. And the Canaanites were then in the land. Abram passed through. I think there's some meaning in that, that it's easy to miss if we read too fast. How do we build walls that can withstand the attacks of the enemy? Mindset number two, we maintain a mindset of patiently waiting on the Lord to provide. We maintain a mindset of patiently waiting on the Lord to provide. So let's think about this scenario again for a moment. And you're Abraham. You're walking through the desert, and you begin passing through this beautiful land. And suddenly you realize, you know, there's some pretty powerful, prosperous-looking cities and villages along the way. And you start noticing maybe a luxurious villa over there, maybe a townhome over there with a 3-car chariot garage, maybe some of those backyard barbecues start wafting across your path. And think about it, you know, you haven't had a bath for weeks. You've been pounding the pavement and the trails. And you've been sleeping on an uncomfortable cot. Your feet are tired. Your back is tired. And you've been pounding tent spikes into the ground. What do you think might just maybe go through your mind? What could you be tempted to think? Well, you know, I'm not seeing a lot of blessings in my life right now. I know the Lord said He would be with me. I know He said that He had some promises that were coming. But would it really be that big of a deal if I just kind of stepped aside off this path? You know, went over here and enjoyed some barbecue? You know, maybe if I go over here just enjoy a little bit of what they got? I got all my eggs in your basket, God. I'm still on your program. But I just want to take just a little detour, just a little bit. Is that what he did? No. Did he de-rationalize? Did he compromise? No, he didn't. That's what the enemy wants you and I to do. And that's surely what he was tempting Abraham to do. He's good at knowing how to distract us. He's good at knowing how to get our focus off of what God promises, the hope we have before us through Jesus Christ, and on to what we can have now. Or the things we don't have now. And it worked for him in the garden. That's the way he operated. He convinced Adam and Eve that they could have it now. They didn't need to wait for God. And a little compromise with sin is no big deal. He can do the same for us. Isaiah 40, verse 31. I want to ask you to turn there. It's one of my favorite passages. And it's really a promise that we can embrace, that we can hold on to. You know, it says, those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. Those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. That was Abraham's mindset, wasn't it? That was the mindset he had. He was willing to wait for what God had promised. Instead of focusing on the now, focused on what he didn't have, he focused on a kingdom that had foundations, whose builder and maker was God. And he waited on the Lord to provide what he had promised. And in so doing, he built a spiritual house of bedrock, on bedrock, built up with precious gold, silver, and stones. And the enemy couldn't knock that down. He couldn't knock that down. Okay, so we maintain a mindset of dogged refusal to be anchored to any other foundation than the one true foundation, Jesus Christ. And secondly, we build on that foundation by maintaining a mindset of patiently waiting on him to provide. We pass through this life, looking to the kingdom, looking to that hope we have in front of us. One more. How do we build a spiritual house around us that will endure the attacks of the enemy? There's a third way I think we see here in the story of Abraham, and for me anyway, this, when I was reading it and studying this and preparing this, it was the most powerful. Mindset number three. During times of uncertainty, during times of need, build altars of thanksgiving to God. During times of uncertainty, during times of need, build altars of thanksgiving to God. You know, a couple years ago, after we attended the feast in Virginia Beach, Elizabeth and I took our kids to Washington, D.C. for a couple days. We'd never been there. It was very exciting, great place to visit. But while we were there, to save money, we ended up taking the subway pretty much everywhere we went. And that was quite an experience all in itself. And one evening, and I don't remember exactly where we were going, it was toward the end of the day, we were trying to get back to our hotel, but we were on the subway and we missed our stop. And the subway went by into a part of D.C. which we kind of told and kind of knew was not probably the best place in D.C. we'd want to go, especially toward that time, getting toward evening. And so we quickly got off the first exit or the first stop we could so we could then get on and take the train back where we came from. And as soon as I got off that onto that platform and I began to look around, the train departed and we're there all alone. Start noticing some things. I'm looking at graffiti. You know, I didn't see that on the other platforms. Some trash around, and I saw some kind of gangster-looking types kind of pushing each other around and bantering and on the other end. And so we didn't look like we belonged there at all. I mean, we had cameras strapped around our necks, and we're wearing, you know, shorts and typical tourist garb. And so I kind of, you know, began to feel a little vulnerable, a little bit of danger in that circumstance. And so I kind of took my family, and we began to inch kind of discreetly as we could, to the other end of the platform. We kind of huddled together and prayed for the next subway to come quickly. And it did. And we got on the subway. We got back to our hotel, possessions and life intact. But it was quite an exciting ordeal. You know, think about Abraham. I mean, we spent 12 minutes, a little bit of uncertainty, a little bit of fear. Abraham spent much of his life after he left Ur facing uncertainty and fear that doesn't even begin to touch the little thing that we went through. That was his life. Sure, he had some good things that he could have, some places he may have wanted to hang his hat for a while. But we know from reading the account of Abraham that there were some places where he felt threatened and his family felt threatened. How did he react to those circumstances? What was his mindset in the midst of uncertainty? Let's read what he did here in Genesis 12, verse 7. Genesis 12, verse 7. It says, "Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, 'To your descendants I will give this land.'" And what did Abraham do? It says, "There he built an altar to the Lord, who had appeared to him, and he moved from there to the mountain east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east, and there he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. And so Abraham journeyed going on still toward the south." And I think we read this quickly and we miss the significance and the power behind that. He built an altar. How do we endure through uncertainty and trial when the outcome's unknown for sure? The circumstances are somewhat fearful. How do we build an immovable wall of protection around us? In that place of uncertainty, in that time of trial, we build altars of thanksgiving to God. And that can be hard, right? It can be difficult. I attended that, as I mentioned, I attended a funeral this morning, and I hadn't mentioned, had this scripture in my notes, but one gentleman stood up. I'm not sure what his relationship was to the man who died of cancer, but he said something that hit me. He said, you know, There's one scripture I've always had difficulty with and I struggle with, and I'm struggling with it really now. It's in 1 Thessalonians 15:8. 1 Thessalonians 15:8, I'll just reference it. We're told to give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Jesus Christ. And this man said, you know, I'm going to question God about that, because that's a tall order, especially when you lose a loved one. And so it's difficult when we have trials and endure that we have to endure, and we have circumstances that make us uncertain, to be thankful. And another situation, story someone told there in the last week of this gentleman's life. He was in hospice, and family were sitting around with him on this little portico, and he was just listening to them talk, and he was sitting in a corner, and he didn't say anything, but suddenly he spoke up, and he said, "Who wants to ask me questions?" And everybody didn't quite know what to say for a minute, and finally someone said, "Are you afraid?" And he goes, "No, absolutely not. I'm not afraid. I've been going through this for a while. I'm preparing for this." And then someone asked, you know, if you had the choice, would you wish this would have happened quickly, or if it would be drug out like it did, like it has? And this had really gone on for 3 years, and the last year was, he endured quite a bit of pain with this. And he sat there for a minute and he said, you know, no. He says, if I hadn't been through what I had been through this last year, if I hadn't known what was coming, I wouldn't have had a chance to really reach out to the people that I love, the people I care about, and actually tell them how I cared about them. He says, you know, I'm thankful for that. I'm very thankful if they had that opportunity I wouldn't have had before. Sometimes only the family finds out after you're gone how much you cared about them. And so he was thankful for that. So what about us? What about us? Where can we build altars in our life to God? Obviously, there are some far larger trials that we all deal with, and very serious trials that we can deal with. But whatever that thing is in your life you've been praying for, whatever that change, what is going wrong in that moment, where that fear or that anxiety threatens to consume your life, or when insecurity of not knowing what's up ahead overwhelms you, you know, in those moments, in those times, the lesson we read here is build an altar. Build an altar. God, I know things are looking kind of bleak now. You know, I don't know what's going to, how this is all going to play out, where it's all going to go. I know the things I have, though, are so much more than the things I don't have. And above all, I know that even though things are not going the way I think they should now in this life, I do know that you have given me a promise, an amazing promise that's certain. And I'm thankful to you. And I build an altar to you. And here's the thing. We know this. We're all aware of this, but I know I need reminding of it. And as reading through this account, it reminded me that there's nothing that can strengthen us more than this attitude of thankfulness. It's nothing that can build impenetrable walls that the enemy can't attack than if in the midst of hardship, in the midst of pain, of uncertainty, we look around and we go, yeah, I'm thankful. God is with me. He loves me. And the enemy can't penetrate that. The enemy can't penetrate that. And that's what Abraham did. That was his mindset. And he was the father of the faithful. And that can, and that should be our mindset as well. In closing, if you would, to Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11. You know, we have many more examples in God's Word of men and women whose lives testified to the bedrock of faith, the solid walls of jewels, gold, and silver that they built their lives around. They built around themselves. And after listing many of them, including Abraham, Paul says in summary here in Hebrews 11, verse 32, Hebrews 11, verse 32, "What shall I say more? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens, women received their dead raised to life again, others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trials of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were tempted. They were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. And they wandered in deserts and mountains, in dens of the earth, dens and caves of the earth. And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. And so all of these were able to endure through the incredible challenges and trials that they faced because they, like Abraham, they remained doggedly anchored to the one true foundation, to His promises and to His Word. And they had that mindset as well of patiently waiting on Him to provide. And it was able to empower them and strengthen them and endure some amazing things that we can only imagine. And they continually, in the midst of those challenges, in the midst of those struggles and that uncertainty, built altars of thanksgiving to Him for all He'd done, all He was doing, and all the amazing things He'd promised He would do. And they're listed here in this book because they built spiritual structures around themselves that lasted. And they testify to you and I. And one day, your and I's names will be here hopefully as well. Hopefully our names will be listed here as well if we embrace these mindsets, if we embrace these attitudes, anchored on the bedrock foundation of Jesus Christ, erecting walls around our lives with gold and silver and precious jewels. If this is how we determine to build, the enemy, the God of this world, he can't touch us. He can't touch us. He can huff and puff all he wants, but he'll never, ever blow our house down.